Here we are with David Gogel, VP of Strategy and Operations at DYDX Foundation. David, welcome to the Defined Podcast. It's so great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so excited to have you because there's so much going on in DYDX recently. The biggest milestone was that DYDX is now it's operating on its own app chain. And this was, you know, a long time coming. There were so many different stages involved in this transition. The tokenomics involved are really interesting as well. So I'm excited to dig into all those topics. So if we can start by, I guess, like taking a step back and describing what DYDX does, and then we can go into, you know, all the latest headlines.
Of course. So DYDX Protocol is one of the leading decentralized exchanges. For the last 2.5 years, the main protocol has been focused on perpetuals trading and was based on Ethereum using Starkware as a layer two. That's really been kind of the main product in market for the last 2.5 years or so. And we've seen over $1 trillion in volume, in cumulative volume over the course of that life cycle. In the meantime, over the last 18 months, DYDX Trading, which is the development company behind the open source smart contracts, has been developing the next version of the protocol, which is a fully open-sourced proof-of-stake blockchain using the Cosmos SDK and Comet BFT consensus mechanism to really provide a fully decentralized and open-source protocol for perpetuals trading. So the DYDX chain is really kind of the new product that has been launched in the recent few weeks. And really, this is a major milestone for decentralized finance, really where the whole technical stack for the front end to the back end to the order book and matching engine is now fully open sourced and run by a community of ecosystem partners that are running the software behind the chain.
Awesome. And just to clarify, there is DYDX protocol that's the smart contracts running on their own blockchain. There's DYDX Trading, and then there's DYDX Foundation. So what do these two entities do?
Yeah, so there's a number of different entities and groups within kind of the DYDX ecosystem. So DYDX Trading really is the main kind of core development team behind the current DYDX protocol on Ethereum. And then they are also the developers of the open source software behind the DYDX chain. So that's kind of the DYDX Trading kind of team. The DYDX Foundation team is really a separate team. We're an entity, a nonprofit headquartered in Zug in Switzerland. We have a separate team, separate board of directors, and we're focused on very different parts of the ecosystem. Our mission is to enable and grow the DYDX protocol by enabling communities, developers, and decentralized governance. So the DYDX Foundation is about 2.5 years old. Our mandate is really focused on driving the decentralization of the protocol. And the first step on that journey was launching the DYDX governance token around the current version of the protocol on Ethereum, and governance contracts that allow users to control aspects of the Ethereum protocol. You know, in the last 2.5 years, there's been over 70,000 unique wallet addresses that have earned DYDX tokens, which has given them utility for the current product and then allowed them to make governance decisions around the Ethereum smart contracts and control the community treasury. And so through that, we've seen the community then make decisions to fund kind of two different sub DAOs within our ecosystem, the DYDX Grant SubDAO, and the DYDX Operation SubDAO, both of which are run completely independently from either DYDX Foundation or DYDX Trading, and are really driven by community members who receive funding from the community treasury to drive various efforts within the ecosystem. So, you know, in the last year and a half, I think the DYDX Grants program has raised or distributed, you know, 3 million or so USDC to over 100 projects and teams and builders within our ecosystem, and continues to fund, you know, strategic initiatives and community-based programs. And then the DYDX Operations SubDAO is a little newer. I think it's about a year old, and they receive funding from the community treasury to help accelerate the development of, you know, the DYDX DAO and provide community-based infrastructure for the DYDX chain. So, you know, the DYDX SubDAO really is kind of the group behind helping to provide a deployment of the indexer and front end for access to the DYDX chain, and really helping to coordinate the deployment of the DYDX chain, or DYDX V4 as it's also referred to. So those are just some of the, at least like groups or more formal groups, but that's, you know, I think the DYDX community is obviously much larger than that. I mentioned, you know, the 50 or the 70,000 unique wallet addresses that have participated in governance today. You know, there's community members, there's endorsed delegates, and then more recently with the DYDX chain, there's really, you know, the validators that run the proof of stake blockchain as contributors that also represent, you know, key parts of our ecosystem.
Got it. Yeah, like so many different players involved in the entire DYDX ecosystem. Yeah, I guess it's part of trying to make this more decentralized. You start kind of needing these groups as you move along that spectrum. So, you know, speaking of that, would love to dive deeper into this evolution of becoming, you know, of being based in an Ethereum layer two, to becoming, to building your own proof of stake chain based on Cosmos. Why was this decision made? Like, why did DYDX feel the need to make this transition?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. And, you know, I think the best source of truth here is a blog post that Antonio Giuliano, who's the founder of DYDX, has kind of put together around the history of DYDX and certain product decisions that have been made over time. You know, DYDX has always been focused on building advanced trading for in a non-custodial way. And so, you know, as the technology stack has evolved over the last few years, so has the product. So if you look back, you know, to 2017, 2018, DYDX was really one of the first venues where you could start margin trading using smart contracts in Ethereum and allowing users to retain custody of their funds at all time. You know, DYDX then launched borrow lend pools and was one of the biggest kind of pool early iterations of that, as well as flash loans. So really having kind of a track record for building new products. Over time, DYDX launched perpetuals trading on Ethereum as a layer one. And then, you know, for those of us that have been in the industry for long enough, we remember kind of the DeFi summer when gas fees for simply depositing and withdrawing to a smart contract became cost prohibitive and really a bad user experience. And so even back then, DYDX was really one of the first major DeFi protocols to research layer two solutions to provide scalability and low cost trading to users to really improve kind of the user experience. So yeah, the current version of the product on Ethereum is, again, based on Starkware as an L2 and Ethereum as a settlement network. You know, I think DYDX was, again, one of the first major protocols to make the leap to L2 and have a working product in production. And I think that proved, you know, really the power of L2s to be able to provide low cost, high throughput non-custodial trading. And that's really been, you know, by all measures, an extremely successful product. Again, recently surpassing $1 trillion in cumulative volume over 2.5 years. But like any decentralized system, you know, the a system is only as decentralized as the most centralized component, right? And that's often dictated by the limitations of the technology. So today, DYDX operates an off-chain order book and matching engine. And then there's been a lot of discussion around centralization issues around sequencers for many L2s. And so as a result of that, really the goal here was, how do you develop a system that is more decentralized, that is able to scale? And you know, the engineers at DYDX Trading spent a lot of time evaluating different L2s, different L1s, and then ultimately decided that you know, leveraging the Cosmos SDK and the tech stack on Cosmos, you could really build a low latency, high throughput, low cost app chain that was really specific to the DYDX use case, which is, you know, trading for perpetuals and other kind of advanced financial tools. And so, you know, it took 18 months or so of development to really build an open source proof of stake blockchain. And, you know, as I mentioned, now that the chain has launched, it's really, really, really exciting time for the broader DeFi ecosystem. This is, you know, really the first time that you have a chain that is fully dedicated to the trading use case, that has been really fully customized at all levels of the stack to be able to support our user needs, which really, again, boil down to low latency, high throughput, and low fees. And you're able to really create kind of that custom tech stack and hand it over to our community to really run and operate going forward.
I think with having your own chain, you get the benefits of being able to customize the experience very specifically to your own use case as an app. But I think the drawbacks may be that I'm wondering whether you lose some degree of network effects, of composability from being within the Ethereum ecosystem. You know, as we know, Ethereum right now, you know, still concentrates most of volume, most of trading that's happening in DeFi and crypto more broadly, maybe just second to Bitcoin in terms of like volume and holders. So yeah, like how do you balance those trade-offs? I mean, and how does that user experience work? Like if do you need to if you're on Ethereum, do you need to bridge over to the DYDX chain on Cosmos? Like, if you want to integrate with the DeFi ecosystem on Ethereum, can you still do that? Yeah, if you can just walk me through some of those trade-offs.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, obviously Ethereum has had a lot of success. And as you pointed out, network effects, the infrastructure is really robust. And you've seen, you know, DeFi Legos evolve over time. I think DYDX historically has been a little less kind of composable just by nature of the product, which really is, you know, a single collateralized USDC margined and settled perpetuals exchange. And so, you know, unlike kind of other DeFi protocols, composability really hasn't been I think a key driver or requirement for DYDX's success to date. Having said that, you know, the tooling, the ecosystem, the developer communities have all been, you know, active contributors to date, and we've certainly benefited from that. You know, I think what's really cool about, you know, the Cosmos ecosystem and stack is that it really is fully composable within kind of the Cosmos ecosystem. So, you know, in IBC is just one example of that, that makes kind of the playing ground much larger. And then the fact that the whole order book, matching engine, front end, the whole tech stack is fully open source really means that any developer anywhere around the world can fork it, build on top and around the base layer chain in a way that just wasn't possible with kind of our current protocol. Mm-hmm. Having said that, you know, the community over the last few weeks and months has really, on Ethereum, has, you know, through governance, decided to adopt the DYDX chain as the next version of the protocol and to bridge over DYDX tokens on Ethereum to be used as the main staking token for the proof of stake blockchain on Cosmos. And so, you know, there was a wrapped ETH DYDX smart contract that has been deployed and that the community has adopted as really the one-way bridge from Ethereum to the DYDX chain, where current users can send their tokens to that smart contract. They'll receive a wrapped version of the DYDX token on Ethereum that through governance now has the same utility and governance rights as the current token on Ethereum. And then the validators on the DYDX chain side look at the event information from that smart contract on Ethereum and then credit the relevant accounts on the DYDX chain with DYDX chain DYDX. So that's kind of what the bridging process looks like today. You know, the other thing to keep in mind, you talked about kind of the infrastructure and wallets. Yeah, there's been a lot of innovation around really reducing kind of the steps for you know, existing kind of Ethereum wallet holders to be able to bridge over. So people can connect to the DYDX chain with their MetaMask wallets, really any wallet of their liking. And then through other types of integrations, people are able to deposit and withdraw USDC to the DYDX chain, you know, from really any L2 or ecosystem through some integrations with Axelar. So, you know, the goal here is really to improve on the user experience and make sure that we continue to work with various partners to build better tooling to really abstract a lot of that complexity away and really make the DYDX chain experience, you know, best in class from a user experience standpoint.
Great. Okay, so if I understood correctly, right now the DYDX token is a wrapped version that is used on the Ethereum blockchain.
Yeah, so let me walk you through this. A little complicated, but so today there's you know, the DYDX token on Ethereum. It's been in circulation for, you know, 2.5 years. There was 1 billion tokens that were minted, and, you know, various reward programs for users of the current protocol to earn those tokens. There's also a very sizable amount of tokens in the community treasury, which is governed by current token holders on Ethereum. Over the last few weeks and months, that community has decided to adopt the DYDX chain as the next version of the protocol and to basically allow for current DYDX token holders to use their tokens as the main staking token on that proof of stake blockchain. So they've adopted, through governance, a one-way bridge, which works like this. So again, there's a wrapped Ethereum DYDX smart contract that's been deployed on Ethereum. If you're a token holder today on Ethereum, you can send your DYDX tokens to that smart contract. We've now kind of rebranded that token as ETH DYDX or Ethereum DYDX. In return for sending your tokens to the smart contract, you're going to receive two new tokens. You're going to receive a wrapped Ethereum DYDX token on a one-for-one basis. That's an ERC-20 token, and it gives you the same governance and utility as the current ETH DYDX token on Ethereum and governance, right, to run the Ethereum smart contracts. That's token kind of number one. You'll get that immediately after sending your tokens to the smart contract. When a user sends their tokens to the smart contract, as part of that process, they also input a DYDX chain address in the smart contract call. And so there's an event on Ethereum that shows this user sent, you know, 100 DYDX to the smart contract and a destination address on the DYDX chain. The validators on the DYDX chain look at that event information in the smart contract and the DYDX chain address that's been inputted, and then they will credit the relevant DYDX chain addresses with DYDX chain DYDX or DYDX native to those validators. So that DYDX chain DYDX is a different token. It's really, you know, a software upgrade. It gives you different types of governance rights around the being able to control governance parameters for the DYDX chain. And then most notably, it can also be staked to validators and contribute to the security of the DYDX chain. As a consequence of staking, you know, all protocol fees generated by the DYDX chain uniquely now flow to validators and to stakers. And so stakers and validators get rewarded for effectively securing the network. So fundamentally, you know, there's two, if a user decides to bridge and it's their decision whether or not to bridge, they would get, you know, one-for-one tokens on the DYDX chain and then a wrapped version of the DYDX token on Ethereum. And both of those give you different types of governance and utility.
Got it. Okay, so there is ETH DYDX. That's kind of the original token. Then if you choose to bridge that token, there is wrapped ETH DYDX, which is a token that stays on Ethereum. And then there is native DYDX, which is a token that's in the Cosmos-based proof of stake chain. All three tokens have governance rights, sounds like, right?
Correct.
But the difference is that you can stake the native DYDX token and you cannot stake the Ethereum, obviously, based tokens.
That's correct. I think the only other difference is they give you governance rights over different protocols, right? The wrapped ETH DYDX token and the current ETH DYDX token allow token holders to govern the current Ethereum smart contracts, right? And the current product. They do not allow you to participate in governance for the DYDX chain. Only DYDX native or DYDX chain DYDX allows stake token holders to participate in governance for governance parameters around the chain.
Wait, so the DYDX exchange on Starkware will keep running?
So the two, my understanding is like the expectation is that the two protocols will kind of live in parallel for X amount of time. I think at some point, DYDX Trading has indicated that they will probably plan to wind down the order book and matching engine, at some point in the next year. And then my expectation is that over time, you'll start to see more tokens bridged over and for activity on, you know, the current Ethereum protocol to be wound down. And then at some point, it may make sense for, you know, the community of Ethereum token holders to decide to like formally wind down the current Ethereum protocol. But, you know, for the short to medium term, I think we can expect kind of both to live in parallel. But you've already seen, you know, in the last 2.5 weeks since the launch of the chain, there's already been, you know, close to 150 million tokens or 15% of the ETH DYDX supply bridged over. And, you know, as of a few hours ago, there's really the first governance vote on the DYDX chain to formally allow trading to start. We're still in this kind of 1 month on-ramp post the launch of the chain. The last 2 weeks have really been kind of this alpha period where there hasn't been any trading. The goal has really been around bridging and staking to secure the network. And today there's a governance vote that was submitted to move from alpha to beta, which would enable some trading on the exchange, on the DYDX chain side of the house. And so, you know, that kind of kicks off the next stage of this growth and flywheel process. Over time, you know, we expect more users, more volume, more liquidity to move from the Ethereum protocol to the DYDX chain protocol.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, even it might be a bit complex to have like all these different tokens and like two separate products, but it makes sense to have this kind of transition period. And it would have been hard to get everyone to bridge right away. So I guess like one of the main moves or advantages of having your own chain is that you now have the trading is fully on chain, I understand, whereas before you had this off chain order book. So what's the significance of this, and what's kind of the advantage for the end user?
Yeah, so small clarification. So the DYDX chain order books are still off-chain, but they're decentralized. So today there's really just one off-chain order book and matching engine. You know, Starkware as an L2 and one sequencer that help provide this fully non-custodial experience, but that has high throughput and low latency. The key innovation here is in most proof of stake blockchains, really the validators participate in consensus. They produce blocks. They help secure the network. That's kind of, you know, proof of stake 101. The key innovation here with building a customized proof of stake blockchain for the high frequency advanced trader use case is really that you can make the validator software really more applicable to meet the needs of our users. So what makes kind of the DYDX chain really unique is the validators, again, participate in consensus, they produce blocks, but most uniquely, they also run a version of the order book in memory. And so, you know, today there's 60 validators in kind of the active set. And all 60 are running a version of the order book in memory and gossiping transactions with other validators and nodes, and then getting to finality and state through the consensus process. And so that allows for a decentralization. You have, you know, becoming a validator on the DYDX chain, running an order book. Anyone can do that. It is fully permissionless. In that sense, it's truly decentralized. You're not relying on one party to run that. You have anyone who can really run an order book and participate in consensus. But it is off-chain, which does allow for really high scalability and high throughput. I think if you look at the technology today, there's really no L1 or L2 that could support the amount of transactions required for a high velocity trading experience by having that whole experience on chain. And so this, you know, off-chain order book and matching engine system, you know, basically allows the chain to scale to about, you know, 1 to 2,000 transactions per second, which really is, you know, orders of magnitude much larger than what you'd be able to achieve on Ethereum today, but still providing, you know, the decentralization and non-custodial kind of experience that, you know, our traders are expecting from us.
Got it. And practically what that means is that buy and sell orders happen off-chain, like in I don't know, a software that's hosted in a server, you know, like any other exchange. But I guess like the difference is that is also, I guess like there's a ledger that's held in every other, in proof of stake validators too. Is that how it works?
No, so today when you're a trader, right, you create kind of an order. That order goes to a validator who runs an order book in kind of the software that they're running. And that validator is trying to match, you know, buys and sells on its order book. In the meantime, when a validator receives a transaction, it also gossips that transaction to other validators that are running the exact same software. And every other validator is running that order book and matching kind of buys and sells. The first kind of validator that, has been selected as the block proposal, every second will basically post all the orders that have been filled on chain. And then through part of the consensus mechanism, other validators will say, you know, the state of the order book and what has been filled is correct. And so we commit this to the chain. Effectively, if a validator is acting poorly or doing MEV, other validators, if more than X amount of stake weight disagree with kind of the state, they can halt the chain. So there's kind of a natural incentive to not extract kind of value as a or MEV, and to really only record on state the true kind of state of the order book and what has been filled by each validator. So again, there's kind of this natural balance where only fills get added to consensus. There's certain types of long-term orders, things like limit orders or kind of things that aren't market orders that get added to consensus as well. But generally, that's how kind of a trade life cycle works. It really is validators participating through consensus, gossiping transactions, gossiping fills to other validators, and through the consensus process of the software, coming to an agreement on the state of the network in kind of a sequential block manner.
Okay, got it. And now, because the order book is decentralized, is DYDX, is the exchange fully permissionless and accessible to anyone, or do you still have to geo-block some users?
Yeah, so the software behind the DYDX chain is fully open source. Anyone can look at it. Anyone can fork it. Anyone can deploy it. Ultimately, running a validator is fully permissionless. Anyone can run that software. In addition, there's a front end and an indexer that has been fully open source and can be deployed by anyone. I mentioned a little earlier the operations subDAO that's been funded by the community treasury and through governance to run public versions of the front end and the indexer. And they've also, through their agreements, have agreed to comply with applicable kind of regulations in the markets where they offer kind of those pieces of software. So, those versions of the front end and the indexer currently geo-block certain jurisdictions. Ultimately, it's up to the community and the operation subDAO on how that should evolve over time. But the goal is for this to be fully open source, fully permissionless, but also recognize that the regulatory environment is different in different places around the world. And ultimately, the deployers of these software should do their own research on the risk that they're comfortable taking and make an assessment from there.
Yeah, got it. Okay, let's talk about tokenomics and incentives for validators, because this is pretty unique, the way that DYDX is doing it, which is paying out fees directly to validators in USDC, I understand. Can you walk me through how that works?
Yeah, so again, at launch, DYDX chain really is focused on perpetuals trading. All perpetuals markets will be settled and margined in USDC. And you know, over the last few weeks and months, you may have seen the launch of the Noble chain, which basically allows for the native issuance of USDC in kind of the Cosmos ecosystem. As a result of that, you know, there's a number of fees to consider on the DYDX chain. Again, I talked a little bit about the benefits of being able to fully customize a chain for our use case. Really, gas fees, you know, unlike Ethereum, where you're competing with a lot of other kind of applications for block space, we've been able to really customize kind of gas fees on the chain to be really low, but still kind of prevent spam mitigation. So there's kind of two different types of gas fees on the chain. There's DYDX denominated gas fees for deposits, withdrawals of DYDX. And then there's USDC denominated gas fees for USDC type of transfers. Those really represent a small amount of the fees that are generated on chain, or that's at least what we expect. The majority of the protocol fees that will be generated will be just trading fees, right? So there's a pretty standard, 30-day maker-taker trading fee schedule that's based on 30-day volume. Those fees are denominated in USDC. Every block traders will pay fees the more they trade. And then all of those protocol fees will effectively be distributed to validators who are securing the network and running core infrastructure for the ecosystem. Validators can decide to share those fees with stakers. And so there's a minimum commission rate of 5%, where a validator can charge a minimum of 5% up to 100%. And then the balance will go to stakers who are staking their tokens and securing the network. So, this is a fundamentally very different kind of setup than what we have today. It's what kind of the community has voted on and endorsed through kind of multiple governance proposals. I think what makes it unique, there really is no kind of block inflation or kind of new tokens that are minted and distributed to new validators on kind of an ongoing basis. Really, all fees that are generated by the protocol for using the protocol are effectively generated and passed on to people contributing to the security of the network. There's really no other type of inflation or block rewards that are minted. Certainly, that can change over time if the DYDX chain community decides to do that. But we think that that's a really kind of more aligned approach to drive activity on the exchange while still aligning a lot of different stakeholders with different interests, all coming together and contributing to this ecosystem.
So that means that there's no new DYDX tokens being minted in order to pay fees?
That's correct.
Okay. And so will the, for now, unless governance votes otherwise, for now, is the supply of DYDX fixed?
So the max supply of DYDX on the chain is fixed at a billion in terms of, effectively matching the amount of ETH DYDX in existence today. Again, I mentioned so far there's been 150 million or so ETH DYDX that have been sent to the bridge and that are credited to different DYDX chain addresses. Again, unless governance at some point decides to change kind of the max supply and create kind of inflation or issue new tokens, really the max supply is going to be a billion, or at least that's what's included in the open source software. And as more tokens bridge over, you know, that distribution to the different DYDX chain addresses will evolve over time.
Okay. And so to pay in USDC, how does this happen? Like, do you mint new USDC with what? Like, do you use DYDX tokens to buy it? Like, where does this USDC come from?
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about composability and IBC earlier. But today, you know, I think one big unlock for the Cosmos ecosystem in the last few weeks has really been the launch of the Noble Chain, which allows USDC holders to natively deposit or withdraw USDC to the Cosmos ecosystem. And then through IBC, you can move your USDC from the Noble Chain to the DYDX chain in kind of a secure manner without having to rely on, you know, funky bridges between Ethereum and kind of Cosmos or other ecosystems in Cosmos. In the past, if you look at, you know, some of the big attack vectors in crypto and in DeFi, like bridges have often been, you know, honeypots for hackers, and we've seen a lot of user funds lost there. The Noble approach, where you really have native issuance of USDC in Cosmos, reduces that attack vector very significantly, with, you know, Circle behind Noble and a lot of the work that they've been doing kind of there. So, the fact that today all of the perpetual markets are only settled and margined in USDC really means that, you know, we don't have to focus yet on figuring out how to bridge over all these other spot tokens that aren't kind of natively issued in the Cosmos ecosystem. In the future, if the DYDX community wants to add spot or different types of collateral types, making sure that, you know, bridging those assets to the DYDX chain is done in a secure manner is, you know, hopefully something that the community continues to think through on what the best approach is to be able to do that.
I see. Okay, so effectively, traders will be depositing USDC that's minted natively in the Cosmos ecosystem onto DYDX. They'll be settling their trades with USDC, and a portion of those trades will be paid in fees to DYDX validators, and that will be shared between validators and stakers?
Spot on.
Okay, good. And so for now, like, all trading will happen with USDC, and you were saying in the future, maybe if DYDX moves beyond perpetuals trading into spot trading, then, you know, maybe that will be the time to figure out a way to bridge Ethereum assets over, but for now it's, you know, all trades really happen with only USDC.
That's correct.
And is like a spot market in the roadmap?
I think from a product standpoint, DYDX, some of the core developers and just community members have talked about at some point potentially adding new types of markets, things like spot, things like futures, things like options, or things like different types of collateral types. Yeah, I think that's really the beauty of having a fully open sourced software and ecosystem is, you know, now really anyone can contribute to the code base and extend kind of the product suite over time. I think the way that, why are we focused on perpetuals today? I think it's, you know, just important to look at kind of where volumes are in the market. You know, DYDX as a mission is really to build the largest exchange kind of period. And we think, you know, this approach to building the largest decentralized exchange is a way to get there. Today, perpetuals trading is the majority of volumes in crypto. Spot trading is much smaller. And then if you look at, you know, traditional financial markets, you see a similar dynamic, right, where derivatives are orders of magnitude much larger than spot. I think, on a daily basis, there's about 150 $70, $80 billion in perpetuals trading in crypto. But even though DYDX today on Ethereum is the largest perpetuals DEX, we only do about 1% of the market or so. I think we're the largest DEX, but relative to centralized exchanges, it's still quite a small amount of volume. And so, as we think about how do you really grow DYDX, you have to really focus on the biggest markets for 10x growth potential. And so that really starts with focusing on perpetuals, which, there's clearly strong product market fit in that sector. And as other kind of products evolve over time or grow within the market, I think we can expect to see, the DYDX chain evolve and support different markets. I think one thing to remember that's really cool is, the community of DYDX chain token holders now control which markets get added to the DYDX chain. I think at the end of this governance vote that I mentioned earlier, we expect 33 markets to be available for trading on the chain. But in the future, we expect governance proposals to be able to add more markets really quickly. And then the ultimate end goal is really to be able to move and launch permissionless markets, which would really allow anyone to create any market of their choosing and create a perpetuals kind of market around that. So, some version of that is available today, but I think that's really an interesting kind of research area to continue to track. And we've seen community members, Chaos Labs in particular, published like really extensive research on different design models for permissionless markets. And I think it's an area that a lot of people find really exciting as an unlock for the ecosystem.
Super interesting. Is there a timeline for when that could happen?
I'd say, I don't know, the next like six to 12 months. I think the goal right now has definitely been, open source the software, launch the chain, secure the chain, enable trading, and like gradually move up. I do think it's going to be kind of this gradual process. It takes, as you can imagine, this whole ecosystem is very new for people. It takes some time to bridge and migrate people over to fully understand how all of that works. So I think, the next 3 to 6 months are really focused on kind of this migration process, really get to product parity to where the Ethereum chain is today, and then really enable a lot of these new unlocks from a research and product standpoint, in the next year, now that the engineers are no longer kind of focused exclusively on the open source software for the chain.
Makes sense. So how do you think DEXs can get to surpass centralized exchange volume?
That's a really great question. It's something we think a lot about. I think there's different kind of cohorts of people and they all have kind of different views on what it takes. I think, what makes DYDX really unique is that, first and foremost, Antonio is a product maximalist and will be the first to say that, to be able to really gain market share and again, centralized exchanges or other products, you really have to build a product that people love to use and finding really strong product market fit. I think the reality from my perspective, like the current version on Ethereum really has product parity with many centralized exchanges, but it has additional points of friction around using self-custody as an example, or just the user experience, looks and feels like a SEX, but is fully non-custodial, and yet we only have 1% of market share. And so the way that you win is really leaning into what makes DeFi indexes unique, and that really is kind of this permissionless access, this permissionless contribution. It's really having, the ultimate users of the protocol actually control the development of that life cycle. And that allows for, exponential ecosystem development and just a better alignment of interests. And, you know, fundamentally, DEXs can be more secure. They are more transparent. Rules are encoded in code. Everyone can see that. Everyone can fork that. If they disagree with it, they can relaunch it. I think we have so many examples in the last 2 years of the failures of centralized kind of counterparties and counterparty risks. And, that clearly wasn't even enough for people to really care, right? So I think there's clearly a subset of people that are decentralization maxis, and we continue to focus on products that kind of support that need. But ultimately, the way that you win is by building a product that people love, leveraging the benefits of decentralization, and really abstracting a lot of that complexity away for users to be able to use a product safely and securely.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, and then to wrap up, you briefly mentioned the end goal for DYDX to become the largest exchange, period. But would love to hear more about kind of this long-term vision. Like, when that happens, what does the market look like? Like, what do financial markets look like?
It's a great question. I mean, I think ultimately, financial services and financial markets are in this period of extreme disruption. They have been in the last 10 years. I think historically we've always relied on centralized intermediaries as the barometers for trust. And now we finally have, technology that really allows anyone around the world to trust code and not individuals, and to really build the pipes that allow for global commerce and global exchange. I think over time we'll continue to see more flows move from traditional financial assets into crypto, into centralized intermediaries. And then over time, you'll continue to see more flows move from centralized exchanges to DEXs as people realize the benefits of self-custody. I think it's going to be a while before we get there. There's still a lot of pain points and friction to get there. But, I could very easily see a world where, DYDX is really the pipes for a lot of financial transactions and derivatives trading globally. And you have different front ends around the world and different ecosystems developing, on top and around these pipes to really, help grow a more fair, equal, transparent, and secure financial ecosystem. I think the launch of the DYDX chain is a monumental step forward in that direction. And, I think and every other kind of DYDX contributor is, just really excited to help build towards that vision that I laid out.
Awesome. Okay, that's a great place to wrap up. This has been a super interesting conversation, David. Thank you so much for taking the time and laying out the vision for DYDX and what this transition into becoming its own chain was all about. Again, super interesting and exciting times for DYDX. So, thanks again. It was a pleasure.
Thanks a lot for having me.